Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Pei Aleph. And Aleph, the Mishnah says, Katav negareshet ishto v'nimlach. He wrote to divorce his wife, which the Gemara discussed, what does that mean? V'nimlach. And then he regretted doing this, changed his mind, and did not give the get. Beit Shammai omrim pasla min hakehuna. Beit Shammai says, the fact that he wanted to give a get is enough of a reason to be posel her min hakehuna. Even if he hands her the get, but there's a condition embedded in the get, and the condition is not fulfilled, that does not ruin her from the kihuna. Different ways to deal with the Mishnah, the reasoning behind the Mishnah, whether it's a gzeira, which is because he was wrote the get, we assume that he wanted to give it or he gave the get, and Gzeira Ktiva Atu Netina, Beit Shammai says that she's Psula Mina Kuna, or whether because there's a Reach HaGet over here, that already that there's signs that there's a problem and that there's a get involved, that's already enough by Yichus of Kohanim to make her Psula Kuna, or the connection to, which we've said many times, and we'll see in the Mishnayot today again, that Machloket Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel here might be connected to their shitot later on in the Masechta, which is the reason you're allowed to get divorced. Beit Hillel says you can get divorced for any reason. If they don't like each other, whatever the issue is, you're permitted to get divorced. On the other hand, Beit Shammai says, Ki matzah ba'i rvat davar, that the only reason one's allowed to get divorced is because there's arayot, there's an ervat davar here. And therefore, following their opinions, if a person wrote a get, the Beit Shammai, there must have been something seriously amiss, awry, and therefore he wrote the get, and there's a serious issue here, and therefore, pasla min hakehuna, because even if he doesn't give the get in the end, there must be something serious enough, or dealing with arayot, that would be posel her min hakehuna, whereas for Beit Hillel, where you can get divorced for any reason, the writing of the get is no evidence of the fact that there's something wrong or something amiss over here. Shalach le Rabbi Yosef braid Rabbi Nashe mitvil lishmuel. Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu. Rabbi, teach us what the locha should be in this case. Yatza alav kol ish ploni kohen katav get ishto. We have this rumor that is circulating that so-and-so the kohen wrote to get to his wife. V'yoshevet tachtav. She is still living with him. Umisham shato, and servicing him, meaning that they live as husband and wife. Mahu, what is the din? Shalach le, so Shmuel sends back to Rav Yosef, the son of Rav Nashim Mitvil, Tetzei, but davar tzarich bdika. So now the simple way to read this, and the way that the Rambam reads it, is that she gets divorced, but davar tzarich bdika, and then we look into the matter to see what the situation is. And if we can't clarify the situation, or it's basically impossible because of the nature of the situation, then teitzei, they have to be divorced. And then you look in Rashi. Rashi says, teitzei, mipnei akol. The rumor causes us to force the divorce. Aval adavar tzarich bidika kodem shenotziena mimenu. Prior to us forcing the divorce, we need to look into the matter. We have a safek here. We need to clarify the safek before we compel her to divorce. Mahi, what is the issue here? What needs investigation? Ilema di mivatlinan kala olo mivatlinan. The question is, do we suppress rumors or do we not suppress rumors? Vaha niharda atre de Shmuel. Niharda, which is where Shmuel is based, the city of Shmuel. Umanarda lo mivatli kala. We're going to see coming up in the Gemara in a couple of daf that the Gemara tells us what is the meaning or definition of a kol, a rumor. It's not all rumors that we start to suspect that there is something wrong. It's a certain type of rumor, certain persistency within the rumor that makes us worry about or take action based on the rumor. So there, the Gemara speaks about different approaches to that. Some places they suppressed the rumors if they had a deem, if they had evidence to the contrary, or if they looked into the matter. In Narada, they took an approach where lo mevat lekala. They never suppressed, they never dealt with rumors that were circulating. You see in Tosafot, afilu al yedei edim. Even if witnesses show up that do not verify the rumor or argue with the rumor, we still do not suppress the rumor The reason being that it looks like Beit Din is going to bat for quote-unquote bad people. Here you have rumors circulating about these individuals, and Beit Din is getting involved every time there's a rumor, trying to suppress the rumors, or in essence being supportive of these questionable characters or these people who have rumors that are circulating about them. And therefore, Beit Din stays out of the fray in order not to cast aspersions on their reputation, on their impartiality in these cases. And so therefore, they don't deal with it, except in cases of imminent or irreparable damage, where if they don't deal with it, there's going to be outcomes that are serious. So over here, you have a rumor. There's no reason, if according to Shmuel, for the Beit Din to get involved. And if it's simply with the rumor, we would paskin based on that rumor and force them to divorce. Ella, what's the question here? Di karu l'netina tiva. Do we call giving writing? Which is, the Mishnah says, katav the geresh et ishto. V'nimlach. Not they gave the get, but rather, he wrote the get, and then he changed his mind about it. Now, if he simply writes the get, we don't paskin like Beit Shammai, we paskin like Beit Hillel. So it would have to be that he gave the get in order for it to have impact, and obviously without a t'nai, but we don't know, because only rumor they're circulating was that he wrote a get. What's the meaning of wrote a get? So he says, if they call netinat tiva, then we would suspect that he gave the get. Where it says, v'chi karu netinat tiva, l'ktiva gufa, milo kari l'ktiva. Even if they call netina by the terminology ktiva, they still call ktiva, ktiva. So how do you know when the word ktiva is used, how do you know whether it means writing, or how do you know if it means giving the get, writing and giving the get? It's impossible for you to know, and therefore why would you rely on the rumor and assume the worst, which is that it was written and given? It says in, de'i migalia milta, the karul netina ktiva. Yes, because if we uncover that in this area, they call netina ktiva, meaning they use the single verb ktiva to mean both write the get and give the get, Dilma Natan Kamre, and then maybe he did actually give it, and Tetzei. And then here you have cumulative evidence of the fact that there's a problem. You have a rumor circulating, and then you have the word Ktiva used in a city where Ktiva can also mean Netina. So that becomes more, we'll call it overwhelming evidence, or circumstantial evidence that the rumors are true, or that there could be something behind these rumors, and therefore it would force them to divorce in that case. So the Havamina of the Gemara was that we would need more than simply a cheshash to have the divorce go through, because just because the word ketuvah sometimes uses nitina, that should not be sufficient evidence to force a divorce. Gemara's conclusion is no, that here all we need is something that would give us a path to believe that there was a get here. That together with the rumor is enough evidence to force a divorce in this case. It says, "V'amar Rav Ashi, kol kala debater nisuin lechashinan lei." Don't we have a principle that any rumors that circulate or start to bubble up after the marriage has already taken place, I mean while they're already married, we don't abide by them, we do not suspect that they are true. So my tetze, nami tetze misheni. What does it mean that she has to get divorced? It means from the second one. So now the Gemara already enters in new information to the case, which is that her original husband, the Kohen, passed away. So as far as the original husband is concerned, Tetze is not relevant anymore because he's already passed away. But afterwards, she marries another Kohen. Now, if she's an Almanah, she's permitted to marry the other Kohen. If she's a Grusha, then she's not allowed to marry the new Kohen. Now, vis-a-vis the first Kohen, the rumors were post-Nisuin. They were already after the marriage had taken place. Therefore, we would not grant them any credence because they're too late. On the other hand, for the second marriage, the rumors already precede the second marriage. And therefore, we would be choshesh. We would suspect that there is something to these rumors and prevent her or force her to divorce the second Kohen. And that's what it means, Tetze, over here. They're trying to determine whether she has to divorce the second Kohen. It says, Im Kain, Tamotzila Zabanav Shavishon. If you do that already, you're going to cast aspersions not only on the second marriage, but on the first marriage. People are going to hear, you know why she had to leave the Kohen? Because she's a divorcee. Well, the only way she's a divorcee is because she was divorced from her first husband. She's divorced from her first husband. That means that her first husband kept her after divorce. It was machzir grushato, which is a problem in the Kohen. And that means that the children that are born of that marriage were chalalim. So then, not only are you hurting the second marriage, you're going back and hurting the first marriage as well. And we said that we don't substantiate rumors that deal after the nisuin. Here you're going to impact with that rumor, even on the first marriage. It says, since we forced the divorce only from the second husband, but from the first husband, we never forced her out, people will conclude, exactly what you suggested, that the Gerushin took place very late in his life. People are not going to assume that the Gerushin took place sometime early on in the first Kohen's life, because otherwise they would assume that we wouldn't let them stay together at that point. So now that we're forcing the divorce only the second husband, not the first husband, it must be that it wasn't relevant vis-a-vis the first husband because it happened so late in his life. Since it was so late in his life, they didn't intervene or it didn't matter because the children were already born. Only once she now marries the second husband do we intervene. And that's why we are okay intervening where the rumor is post-nisuin of the first husband and pre-nisuin of the second husband, because there will not be ramifications to the first husband in that case. So, Amar Rabbah Bar Chanan Rabbi Yochanan Mishim Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, Borei Shelo Kedorot HaRishonim Dorot HaAchronim. Usually a phrase like this in the Gemara says, Yiridat HaDorot. Look how the earlier generations were so much greater than the later generations in Limud HaTorah, Yirat Shamayim, and Midot. Because Dorot HaRishonim, Beit Shammai. The first, or the earlier generations are Beit Shammai of our Mishnah. Dorot HaChronim, Rabbi Dosa. And the later generations are Rabbi Dosa. The Tanya, Shvuya, Ochelet, Bitruma, Divrei Rabbi Dosa. Rabbi Dosa was so makil by a woman who was taken into captivity that she was allowed to return to her husband, who's a Kohen, and eat Truma, or to return to her father's house if she's a Bat Kohen and eat Truma, and we don't worry about the fact that she is quote unquote a zonah. Even if it was be'ones, even if it was against her will, even if she was raped, there would be a problem here if she was married, and that would deem her a zonah. If it was someone that it was illicit or improper for her to marry, that would affect her chances for eating Truma. Nevertheless, Rabbi Dosa says that we do not disqualify her from Truma, because Amar Rabbi Dosa, v'chima salara vizeh, so this individual, here the Gemara uses the term Aravi, whether that is later terminology that was put in by the censor, or whether that's because the Gemara in Kiddushin later on says that there were 10 fistfuls or measures of Znut that came down to the world, 9 of them went to Arabia, and 1 of them went to the rest of the world, meaning that Znut was the character trait of the Arabians, and therefore the Gemara uses the term Aravi here because of that aspect or that proclivity or that stereotype. So they say that if he takes her into captivity, that doesn't guarantee, or that doesn't mean that he slept with the woman. He might fondle her, he might do certain things to her that are unpleasant and that are improper, but it doesn't mean that he slept with her. And therefore, Rabbi Dosa says she's not automatically psula lekuna unless we have evidence of the fact that there was Biyah in this instance. Tosafot already raises the issue that here Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, Amar Rabbi Chanan Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai is Stam Rabbi Yehuda in Shas. And so Tosafot points out that Rabbi Yehuda has a position that aligns with Rabbi Dosa. So Tosafot says here, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai is complaining about Yiridat HaDorot, yet he is the Baal HaMemra, or he's identified with this same position as Rabbi Dosa. So it seems strange that he would be, as Tosfot says, Koret Tagar al Atzmo, that he's calling himself out on this. And Tosfot says, maybe that's it. Gam al Atzmo ya Koret Tagar, that Rabbi Yehuda himself was calling out that this was a problematic thing, that he was passing this way. Or, Inami, Lav Davar Ched Mamash Kamar. When the Gemara equates the position of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai and Rabbi Dosa, it doesn't really mean literally that they're the same, but they derive from the same idea, or they're along the same lines, but not necessarily it's exactly the same, and therefore maybe Rabbi Yehuda isn't as extreme as Rabbi Dosa, or you can say that Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai is compelled, like Tosafot says over here, to pass in the way he sees it, But he also knows that the way he sees it is also a Yiridat Dorot. So he's coming to grips with that fact. Again, Yiridat Dorot. Dorot HaRishonim Machnisim Peruteim Derech Trak Simon, that the earlier generations, when they brought their grains and their fruits into the house, they brought it in. Rashi says Trak Simon is the main entrance. They took it through the front door and the main shahr. Kedei Lechayevan V'maser. In order to obligate them in Maser, this is what's otherwise known as Riat Pnei Abayit. That one of the qualifications to be B'chayav in Shemot Masrot is Riat Pnei Abayit. This is obviously after the item has been processed, then bring it into the house is koveya for the chiyuvim of trumot and ma'asrot, whether you bring it in, b'motshela, you bring it in while it's still in its kernel, while it's in it with the chaff and in the head of the grain, then also you may not be chayav. So you have to be at a certain point of processing, that if you bring it into the house, it's koveya l'maser. So now, if you bring it in through Riyat Pnei Abayit, through the main entrance, then it becomes Chayav in Trumot and Masrot, and you no longer can partake of it, not even Achilat Arai, not even a snack, not even a little bite from it, you can't give it to your animals anymore, you have to take off Trumot and Masrot. Because Riyat Pnei Abayit is one of those things that's Koveya, that sets the time period or the threshold by which you would then have to take off Trumot and Masrot. It might have to do partly with what your intent is for the grain, that Riyat Pnei Abayit might be something that's koveya when you intend for the items to be used in the house, not when you intend to sell it in the shuk, where there the qualification might be the finishing of the processing, because of your intent to take it out to the shuk. There are other things like Shabbat and other things that we know in the Mishnayot, in Trumot and Masrot, that tell us that they are koveya al-maser. This is koveya for someone who's bringing the items into the house to utilize in the house. Now, the reason that you wouldn't want to do this is because if you're koveya the Shemot and Masrot, we said before, you can't utilize them le achilat arai for anything at all. It's true that even without bringing them into the house, you can't eat achilat keva. Nevertheless, achilat arai is a decent dispensation, first of all, because you can snack from it, but more importantly, you can feed it to your animals. Giving it to your animals, all eating of animals is deemed to be achilat arai. And therefore, you could use it as animal feed and give it to the animals without having to take off Shemot and Masrot, if you didn't have Riyat Pnei Abayit. So the reason to avoid Riyat Pnei Abayit is that you can continue to utilize the grains or the fruits for the animals without having to take off Trumot Masrot, which is a savings. It's not overwhelming, but it is still substantial because it can reach up to, 20%+ of the produce that you're losing. So Dorot Achronim, Machnisim Peroteim, Derech Gagot, V'Derech Karpifot. On the other hand, the later generations bring in their fruits through the roof or through the backyard, kedei lepotran min ha-maser, in order to relieve them of the obligation of having to give maser. Damar Rabbi Yanai, ein ha-tevel mitchayev v'maser ad shireh pnei ha-bayit. This is the halacha, which is that tevel doesn't become chayav in shemot and masrot until it sees the entrance to the house. Shneimar biarti ha-kodesh min ha-bayit, that I eliminated the Kodesh from Bayit, which is in Vidui Maser, which implies that the Maser is in the house. So the Chiyuv of Maser have something to do with the house. Also the word Bisharecha is used, which seems to indicate that it's going through the gate or the entranceway to the house. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilu Chatzer Kovat. Yochanan on the other hand says that even a Chatzer is Koveya, Shnemar, Vachlu Bisharecha Visaveyu. Says you eat it in your gateways and you'll be satisfied. Shearecha, the Gemara deems as being the shahr, the gateway to the courtyard. Speak about the door to the house, the gateway to the courtyard. So bisharecha would be an entrance to the courtyard. The backyard, you go through the roof, so you avoid the chatzer. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, you can still avoid the din, just not going through the main entrance, not going through the front gate and front door. You can prevent it becoming chayav in trumot and masrot, as long as it doesn't end up in the chatzer. Now the reason that they might have allowed for this dispensation is both because of the poverty and the economic hardship that they were under, as well as the fact that bizman hazeh, that trumot and masrot might only be midirabanan. And therefore, because of the combination of those issues of both the fact that they were under tremendous economic hardship and it's post-churban, where it's only going to be midrabanan, they allowed for this circumvention of the halacha and allowed them to be patur from Trumot Masorot, or they didn't stop this practice. That's the reason behind why they did it. And that is the statement here by Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai, that there's Yiridata Dorot, in the sense that they tried to obligate themselves in the earlier generations, and we try to avoid the obligation in the later generations. Tosafot over here is bothered by Rabbi Yanai's position that Bayit, or Riyat Pnei Bayit, is the Koveya, because he says that the Mishnayot are replete with examples that when you bring it into the Chatzer, that the Chatzer is Koveya, and that the Locha is like Rabbi Yochanan. Says he doesn't even know how Rabbi Yanai can have an opinion other than what Rabbi Yochanan says. In the end, he says, Yesh Lomar, the Rabbi Yanai Muki Lohu Midrabanan. The Rabbi Yanai is going to have to say that all those Mishnayot and Shas that suggest that the Chatzer is Koveya will be only Midrabanan. Midoraita, it's Riyat Pnei Abayit. Midrabanan, the Chatzer, and he'll agree that the Chatzer works, but it's only Midrabanan. Midoraita, it's the Riyat Pnei Abayit. So that's one way that Tosafot deals with it. Others try to reconcile by saying it's the nature of the chatzer, what type of chatzer that we're speaking about, and different chatzerot in different scenarios will be koveya or won't be koveya, and that's how Rabbi Yanai will get around it. Now, this does have ramifications to halacha today, especially where we, in our yards, already have fruit trees or items that are planted. So that means that if you have a fruit tree or an item planted there, what is considered to be Riyat Pnei Abayit now, or Riyat Pnei Achatzer? Do you have to bring them from the outside in order for it to be Koveya? And therefore, if your tree is in your Chatzer, until you bring it into the house, then it would not be Chayav, because in the Chatzer, it was already in the Chatzer. Or, is the mere fact that it grows in the Chatzer Koveya by definition? Which means that if you walk up to the tree, and you just want to pick one fruit off and eat it, you couldn't do that without taking off Trumot and Masrot. Because you can no longer eat an achilat arai unless you've already taken off chumot and masrot. So the fact that today we have fruit trees in the chatzer itself, there is discussion amongst the poskim as to whether that is koveya automatically, and there's no achilat arai. You pick a fruit off, you gotta take off chumot and masrot immediately. And if you bring it to the house, of course, so you make a gorin, you bring a pile of them, you put a whole bunch of them together, then you would definitely have to take off chumot and masrot. But there are other poskim that believe that you still have the dispensation of achilat arai until we do today, which is the yard can't be the koveya because it's already there. And only once you bring it into the house or you make a pile, meaning that you pick a whole bunch of them, then you'd be chayav and chumot masrot. If you just pick one off the tree, you could eat it without taking off chumot and masrot. Next Mishnah. This Mishnah has huge ramifications halacha lemaaseh, and we'll try to discuss them because, especially today, very, very wide-ranging implications. Amar Rabbi Bar Chana Rabbi Yochanan. Amegaresh et ishto, valana imo bpundigi. Person already divorced his wife, and then they are secluded together in the motel, in a bed and breakfast, wherever it is that they are secluded. Bichamai omrim, eina tzricha imenu get sheni. Bichamai says, no get is needed over here. Beit Hillel omrim, tzricha imenu get sheni. You do need another get over here. We'll see in a second in the Gemara what the suspicion is or what the problem is. Ematai, when is this true? Bizman shnitgasha mina nisuin. That's only if they divorced after they were completely married, after the consummation of a marriage. But, umodim binitgasha mina usin. If they divorced when they only had halachic engagement, kiddushin, then, shein atzrichai gerna get sheni. Everybody agrees, including Beit Hillel, that you don't need a second get. Mivnei shein libo gaspa. Because they don't have a certain amount of familiarity that would make us assume that just because they're secluded, that they also had bi'ah. Right? That's the assumption of the Mishnah, that yichud and bi'ah are synonymous. Therefore, if they had yichud, we have to suspect they had bi'ah. So that's only true if they have a certain amount of comfort with each other. If they have that comfort, then we would assume there is bi'ah. That's true by nisuin. That wouldn't be true by erusin. Although, the Rishonim note that if it looks like they have a certain amount of comfort even after erusin, we would apply to them the same din as a nisuah. So, Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Machloket, again, we saw this earlier back on Daf Ayin Gimel, Bishra'ua Shenivala. The only machloket here is when we see that they actually had bi'ah. Beit Shammai Savre Adam Oseh Bilato Bilatznut. Beit Shammai believes that a person will engage in bi'ah, not for a tachlit, not for a purpose or pure motives, mean that they will end up having znut. Whereas, Beit Hillel Sabre, en adam osebilato bilat znut. If a person engages in this type of behavior, we're going to assume that he does it bikashrut, meaning that he does it for a proper end in order to marry her. And therefore, that's why Beit Hillel requires a new get over here, because we assume that even though they were divorced, they are now remarried at this point. Right, Magzir Kedushato, according to this. Avaloro Oshinivala, if we don't see that they had bi'ah, Diviakol inatzricha yemenu get shini. We do not say that she requires a second get. Or in other words, what the Gemara, or what is being implied here by Amar Rabbi Bachana Rabbi Yochanan is, yichud is not synonymous with bi'ah. Just because there's yichud doesn't mean bi'ah. You have to see the bi'ah in order for there to be bi'ah. Gemara says, Tanan, our Mishnah. Amodim binit garsha minei usin, she'in atzricha yemenu get shini. Everybody agrees by Gerushin from the Erusin, you don't need a get shini. She'en libo gaspa, because they're not so comfortable. If they saw that they were having bi'ah, why should it matter if it's Erusin or Nisuin? You saw bi'ah. You saw bi'ah, then we know there was bi'ah, and the machloket should persist even in Erusin. The fact that the Mishnah says it doesn't persist in Erusin, the machloket, shows you that they must not be arguing in a case where you saw bi'ah, but rather in a case where there was yichud. Ella matznitan bishlo ra'u shenivalat. It's clear that our mission is a case where it was yichud and not seeing them engaging in bi'ah. Rabbi Yochanan demar ki haitana. So then, Rabbi Yochanan's statement was not a qualification of the Mishnah, but rather following the Tosefta, which is the Tanya. Amar b'shim ben Elazar lo nechluku beit shemai beit hilel ad shelo ra'u shenivalat she'en atzricha imenu get sheni. When they don't see her engaged in bi'ah, then nobody disagrees that she doesn't need a second get. It's in the double negative right here. Ama nechluku, where did they argue? Al shiru'u ashenivala, where they do see them engaging in bi'ah. Shebet Shemai omrim adam osib bilato bilad znut. Shemai says that a person will engage in such behavior even for non-tachlit motives and just for znut. And therefore, if we can ascribe positive motives to what he's doing, we will ascribe them. And that means that we think he got married again. Matznitan dukimna belora shenivala, but my plige. Our Mishnah, where we say that they didn't have bi'ah, then what's the machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai? In the Tosefta, it's clear what the machloket is, because we saw them having bi'ah. The question is, does the person make his bi'ah znut, or does he make it a bi'ah of kashrut, or only of kiddushin? That's the question. But in our Mishnah, where there was no bi'ah, so then what's the machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai? B'mai plige, what do they argue about? The machloket is, di'kei de yichud, de'lekei de bi'ah. We have edim that they secluded, we don't have edim that they engaged in marital relations. What do we say then? Beit Shammai Savrei, lo amrin, hein hein edi yichud, hein hein edi bi'ah. We don't say that it's synonymous. We do not say just because they secluded, therefore they must have had bi'ah. Beit Hillel Savrei, the way that we paskin, amrin, hein hein edi yichud, hein hein edi bi'ah. That the edim that they were secluded are also the edim that they had bi'ah. There's a presumption of action. There is an equation of equivalence here that yichud equates to bi'ah. And therefore, v'edim ha'bichud, we assume that bi'ah took place. Omodim v'nitgarsha min erusin, she'en atzricha yemenu get sheni. And they agree that when there's gerushin from the erusin, that you do not need a get sheni. To kevin deinu liba gaspa, since he's not so familiar, comfortable with her, lo amrinan heinen edi bi'ah. We don't say that that equation exists. Just because there's yichud, there is bi'ah. We don't have that equation because there's a mitigating factor, which is they're not so comfortable, or they don't have that type of relationship. And therefore, we can't just assume, because there was yichud, there was bi'ah. Where it says, Umi amai Rabbi Yochanan hochi. Did Rabbi Yochanan really say this? Fama Rabbi Yochanan alocha kistam mishno. We have a principle that Rabbi Yochanan always says, alocha kistam mishno. Our mishno is a stam mishno. Yet, the Gemara here is saying that Amar Rabbi Bachana Rabbi Yochanan is qualifying the brayta, or basically supporting the position of the Tosefta. Where it says, and we're establishing or setting up our mission as a case that is opposed to the Tosefta. It's a case where we don't see them having bi'ah. So that would mean that Rabbi Yochanan is passing like the Tosefta over our Mishnah, but the Mishnah is a stam Mishnah. Where it says, Amorai ninu v'alibid Rabbi Yochanan. Machloket Amoraim within the position of Rabbi Yochanan. Or in essence, when Rabbi Yochanan says, Alach kestam Mishnah, where does that apply? Is that apply everywhere there's a stam Mishnah? And therefore over here too, we would say that Rabbi Yochanan, Alach kestam Mishnah. Or is it only when the Mishnayot have a machloket in them, and then Rabbi brings the Mishnah as a stam Mishnah? We find other places a machloket, and then in another place, Rabbi brings it as a stam mishnah. So that shows us that Rabbi intentionally picked one of the two opinions, Rabbi bringing it as a stam mishnah. But if he brings a stam mishnah when we don't have any evidence of a machloket anywhere else, then that doesn't necessarily give us evidence as the fact that the stam mishnah was meant to paskin that way. He simply brought that daya down because he thought he liked it, or he wanted to bring it, or maybe there's nobody who argued. We won't ascribe as much weight to a stam mishnah if we don't know that there's another mishnah with a machloket in it, and that is the machloket amaraim over here. How extensive is that shita of Rabbi Yochanan that alocha ke stam mishnah? Right now, again here, we have a machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, and you could again connect it to the machloket later on in the Masechta, which is, why does an individual get divorced? So again here, you can make the same equation, which is, Beit Shammai says that a person gets divorced because there's a serious infraction or problem here. And therefore, Beit Shammai believes that we don't say, hein hein ede yichud, hein hein ede bi'ah, because she is ma'us alav. She is disgusting to him. He divorced her because there was some sort of extramarital affair. There was a real problem here. And therefore, we don't assume automatically just because there's yichud that there is bi'ah. On the other hand, Beit Hillel, who has a much broader scope of reasons why one can get divorced, meaning any reason, therefore, you would say, hey, nei, nei, de yichud, hey, nei, bi'ah, because seclusion could equate with bi'ah, because the divorce might have nothing to do with something that makes him ma'us, be'enav. It could be he just didn't like her that day. He was angry at her. Whatever the reason is that he got divorced, there's easy reasons to believe that when they get back together, that bi'ah would take place. And so again here, we see that connection between that shita, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai about divorce, maybe impacting their opinion over here. That's number one. Number two, the Rambam brings in the name of the Gaonim, and then this expands to a much bigger issue, which is that the Gaonim went as far as to say that Beit Hillel's shita here, that whenever we say that Ein Adam Oseh Bilato Bilatznut, we will do acrobatics to explain or to deal with the situation. So for instance, if an individual marries his shifcha, that's what the Rambam brings down, and he has a child from that shifcha, we will assume that that child is probably Jewish, and that he might affect, for instance, if there's a situation of yibum, that he would be chayav in yibum. Why? Because ein adam oseh bilato bilatznut, and therefore he for sure freed the shifcha kananit before he had bi'ah with her, or converted her before he had bi'ah with her, and he had bi'ah with her because shrut. That's how far the gonim say that goes. The Rambam on the spot says, I'm not the mikabel. He says, you can't say that in every scenario that ein adam oseh bilato bilat znut, that a person will not make it into bilat znut. The scenarios that are mentioned here in the Gemara are very particular, and that's what you noted before, that here they were once married and got divorced. That's where the Gemara says ein adam oseh bilato bilat znut. Gemara doesn't say that in any scenario. It says in a very particular cases where there was nisuin, kerushin, and now we're dealing with their seclusion after that point. That's a case when we say ein adam oseh bilato bilatznut. But if coming from ex nihilo where there's no relationship, or where it's some crazy case where you're saying they converted her, he freed her, we're not going to say that in those scenarios. That's the shita that Rambam, the Raivan on the spot, argues and says no. That ein adam oseh bilato bilatznut is a more general principle, or in essence, it's a view of how people conduct themselves. That if people in cases where they can conduct themselves b'heter, they're not going to conduct themselves b'isur. And therefore we assume that if they engage in this activity, they're doing it b'heter, and that they'll do whatever it takes to make sure that it's done b'kashrut. That's the machloket between the Rambam and the Raivad. That machloket then expands and has impact in many areas. The modern day phenomenon, but we'll talk about the fact that it had implications even in the time of the Rishonim, in the modern day phenomenon where you have a secular marriage or a civil marriage, and the two individuals now live together. What do we assume about their living together? Do we assume that ein adam oseh bilato bilatznut, and therefore, even though they never had a halachic marriage, they're married because they had bi'ah, and ein adam oseh bilato bilatznut? Or do we say that civil marriage is meaningless, and in that scenario, adam oseh bilato bilatznut, and therefore they're never married halachically? That has major ramifications as to whether they need a get to get divorced. And therefore, if they are married civilly, divorced civilly, and the woman then goes on to marry another Jew, are the children from that second marriage mamzerim, or is there no issue at all? So this is serious, and has serious ramifications, and is a very prevalent issue today, because of the preponderance of secular and civil marriages, where the people have no connection to Yadut. Common law marriage is simply that they live together, where there's no rabbi or religious motive involved, or even when there are religious parties involved, where it's not done al pi adat, it's not an orthodox marriage. So in all those situations, when it's pachat mishav apruta, it was a ring exchange ceremony, where the kedushin are not kedushim that are ksherim, what happens to that marriage afterwards? What is the lochic status of that marriage afterwards? So it turns out it's a machloket of the Rishonim. The Rashba believes that even though a person might be suspected of doing other aveirot or doing other things that are wrong, we don't necessarily say that he was oseh bilato bilat znut. The chazoka that the Gemara establishes here is that a person ein adam oseh bilato bilat znut, that chazaka applies in that the person does other things that are improper. Or even if he does other aveirot, we don't ascribe this aveira to them. And therefore, if a person lives together with a woman, we assume that the bi'ilah was done l'shem kiddushin, even though this individual might be in an improper marriage. Meaning, for instance, the woman had an extramarital affair, and then he takes her back afterwards. The bi'ilah that he has at that point in time, is that a bilat znut because it's illegal for them to live together? It's improper for them to live together. Or maybe he's not choshesh for the din that we learn out by sotav, nitma'a, that she's not allowed to return to the husband, but he still would make his bilato, bilat kasher. He would establish kiddushin over here, even though he's living with her in sin, he wouldn't live with this sin. So that's the Rashba's view. On the other hand, the Rivash and the Radvaz and some of the other Rishonim say that that's not the case. If a person is already suspected of not acting properly, then we're also going to suspect that they would have a bilat znut. Especially in a case where the impropriety is associated with biyah or with marriage. And so that if the person acts improperly in that case, even in a case where it's lack of knowledge that causes them to do that, where they're an onus, meaning that they don't know and they're ignorant, nevertheless, they act in that manner, we don't give them the chazak anymore. We don't have this anansade. We don't say that we therefore assume that whatever biyah they had was a biyah, l'shem, nisuin, or kedushin, because these people don't care about these halachot. Again, whether intentionally they don't care about them or whether unintentionally they don't care about them, it's not something that is meaningful to them. Now, that still can be modified, even if you believe that, if the couple is intending to live as a husband and wife, and wants to live as a husband and wife, and acts like that, maybe even those shitot that say that when there's impropriety, we don't necessarily say that there's a chazaka. Over there, maybe you would argue that there is a chazaka, and that turns out to be a major machlok between Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Henkin said, in his case where you have people living together as husband and wife, they have a civil marriage, or whether they're just living together, and there are witnesses to the fact that they live together, they live in communities where there are religious Jews, you have edim that are edim ksherim, therefore you have edei yichud. If you have edei yichud, then you have edei bia. You have edei bia, en adam oseh bilato bilat znut, they are married min halacha. And therefore Rav Henkin says, they need a get. If they don't get a get from the marriage, the children born when this woman just divorces civilly and marries someone else are mamzerim, according to Rav Henkin. Moshe Feinstein argues on Rav Henkin and says that's not the case. First of all, he says that edim ksherim don't help you if the underlying chazaka doesn't exist. That's the first thing that Rav Moshe says. Just because you have edim doesn't help the situation because you have a problem with the underlying chazaka. So you can't just say unless the bia you establish is going to be a bia that is going to be a bia of kashrut. That's number one. Number two is, he says, that you see from the Rivash and the other poskim that nida is sufficient grounds for the person to be considered to be living in sin or impropriety, and therefore the bi'ah would be deemed a bi'at znut and not a bi'at kasher, a bi'at kiddushin. And in the majority of these cases, when they're living as husband and wife, they clearly do not keep the mitzvot of nida. And again, he talks about the fact that ignorance of the laws of nida aren't necessarily a reason to believe that they would make it into a bi'at of kashrut rather than a bi'at znut. He talks about different difficulties. The tshuva of Moshe is about a woman from Hungary who had been married civilly and divorced civilly and now was now married or wanted to remarry. And what was the status of that original marriage where they can't find the husband anymore and they can't get a divorce from him? So what's the status? And whether in the cities that she lived, were there rabbanim there or Jews that could have told them about the information? Or were there mikvaot where she could have gone to the mikveh? All of these cases where we have to suspect whether they lived as from Yidden, or they did not live as from Yidden, the question there is very relevant because it would deem whether they are living in sin or not living in sin, and that would impact on whether there was a bi'at znut. So anyway, major machlok between Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Henkin had another machlok at something that he felt very strong about, which is that the practice of the yeshivot to make kiddush before tikiat shofar and Rosh Hashanah was improper. And later on in his life, when Rav Henkin wasn't well, when his mind wasn't all there with him, people tell stories of Rav Henkin that he used to say over and over again two things. You can't eat before you blow shofar and Rosh Hashanah, and the children are mamzerim. These two piskei halacha were on his mind, and this argument with Rav Moshe was so much on his mind that that's what he repeated. I mean, the kedusha of such an individual, that when he gets ill, that's all he's thinking about, that's all he's speaking about was this item. It's stories that are told about Rav Henkin. There are modern day cases. Today it comes up a lot. I just saw a psak from a Beit Din here in Eretz Yisrael, where a couple got married civilly in Cyprus, which is what couples do in Israel since there is no civil marriage. You have to use a religious marriage. So if they want to get married civilly, they go to Cyprus in order to get married. So this couple, Chiloni couple, went to Cyprus to get married. When they came back to Israel after they married, they wanted to get divorced. Well, if you're in Israel, the only way to get divorced is through a get, because you're now under the auspices of the Israeli authorities. So unless you go back to Cyprus and get your civil divorce, you're going to get divorced halakhically, and they got a get. Fine, they're now divorced, chiloni. They were married in Cyprus, divorced with the proper get in Eretz Yisrael. What should be the problem? We've solved the problem that you have with most of the other cases where there's no get, except now that the woman is dating another man who is a Kohen. She wants to know now if the get was a real get, because the marriage wasn't a real marriage. They were lahachis, meaning that chilonim, that didn't want to have to subject themselves to marriage by the rabbanut. They intentionally went to Cyprus to get married, and now here they come back there, still got divorced. Is that get deemed to be a real get, because maybe the marriage was not deemed to be a real marriage? And that comes back to this question of Moshe Feinstein, of Henkin, whether the bi'ah that they had when they lived together as husband and wife afterwards, whether that bi'ah deems them to be husband and wife, and therefore the get is a real get, or were they never married? And since they were never married, the get had no real meaning because the divorce was a divorce of a non-marriage. If you're divorcing from a non-marriage, then there's a lot more room to be made, even though we know from the Gemara's here that re'ach get is posel, and that there's reasons to be posel, even if it wasn't a real marriage. But in a situation where we need to be mekel, where it's a difficult situation, and maybe it's someone who's not shomer Torah mitzvot, is not going to listen to us necessarily, how much can we be mekel in these situations? This woman now has to get married and wants to get married in Israel. The rabbanut in Israel won't marry her if she's a divorcee trying to marry a kohen, even if they are secular. So they have to deal with this issue first before they can get married now under the Israeli authorities. It's interesting that the way that they describe in the case, they're describing the individuals, the Ashkenazim, their background that is Ashkenazim, not Sephardim. I mean that Ashkenazim, who, when they are detached from religion, don't have a strong tradition at all, versus Sephardim, that even when they are not religious, have a very strong, very Mesorati. The case notes that as they're dealing with trying to figure out what was the status of their marriage when they were civilly married. But again, exactly this question, and a modern day question that is very relevant, both because of the number of civil marriages or non-halachic marriages, as well as the high rate of divorce. If you have a low rate of divorce, it's not a big issue. But if you have a high rate of divorce, then this issue is very serious. And Rav Moshe's psak is a very big psak in being matir in these situations to say that they were not really married and therefore the divorce is not necessary, the get is not necessary in those cases. The husband was very secular and demanded that they go to Cyprus. And she wasn't as gung-ho or bent on going to Cyprus. She notes that her husband was, and that's why they went to Cyprus. Which is part of the case, because it makes them very anti-religious, which is part of what Ramosha speaks about, why we don't have this Anan Sadeh, that the Bia is a Biat Kiddushin, because these people are clearly trying to be anti-Halacha, and Ois Kiddushim, and Ois Kiddusha. Right? So that's why that's relevant to the case. Right, but maybe you can't establish Kiddusha or Kiddushin unless you are a practicing person. I mean, if you're doing all these Averot, then maybe you don't have that Chazakah of being a person who's kasher. The whole thing is built on an Adam kasher, that we presume, there's a presumption of kashrut, and that a person would act in this way. But it's only a presumption, it's a chazakah. Do we ascribe that chazakah to individuals who don't care about halacha? That's the question. Next Mishnah. Kansa beget kireach. Teitzei mizeh u'mizeh. If they got married after she was divorced with the get kireach, then she has to divorce both parties, meaning both the original husband and the second husband, because the get is not a good get. And then it equates to what we saw in the previous Mishnayot, that all these penalties apply to her. Tosfot over here already asks, what's this doing over here? Why isn't this back with the other Mishnah? I mean, this should be a part of the Mishnah there. That's what Rabbeinu Yosef asked. He says, because we got on a tangent. I did the Tani, since it talked about a Katav HaSofer and gave the get to one of them and the Shovar to the other one of them. Then it talks about Katav B'Gereshet Tishto, which involved Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Once we got to Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, we brought another Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. So it took us a little while to get back to the topic. So yeah, in Ochanami, it belongs with that Mishnah, but we went off on a tangent of Machlokot, of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Now we're back to that same Mishnah. Get Kereach, Hakol Mashlimim Alav, Divrei Ben Nanas. Ben Nanas says that when you get to a Get Kereach, anybody can sign on it. Anybody, seems to me, even Psulei Edut can sign on it. The only psul that is permitted here is a relative. Not any psul, just psulei edut that happen to be krovim. Haruim la'id b'makom acher, as long as they are kosher edim in any other scenario, just because their relatives there are psul over here, they can sign on the get, we'll see why. Vezu get kereyach. What is a get kereyach? Kol shikusharav mirubim meidav. Where the ties or the folds are greater than the number of edim that are signed on it. Get kereach, Raz Rashi notes here, the Gemara notes it, in Bava Batra, was established by the Chachamim because of Kohanim, who were Kaptanim, and got angry very easily. And it says they got angry quickly. We know that they have tempers, that is the nature of Shevet Levi, of Kohanim. They would divorce their wives. Okay. But the problem then is, after he calms down, and he regrets having divorced his wife, for a Kohen, there's no fixing that problem. Once he's divorced, it's Makzir Grushato, and she's a surah to him. So they wanted to slow down the process of giving gitin. They did that by making the get more complex. And that is that they made a get into what's called a get mikushar. Get mikushar is where you write one or two lines of the get, you fold the paper over, you stitch it up, and then somebody signs that fold. You write another two lines, and then you fold it over, stitch it up, and somebody signs the back of that fold. So on and so forth until you write the whole get. That process is much more involved. Since it's more involved, it takes longer time. It gives us more time to assuage the anger of the Kohen or for him to rethink whether he really wants to divorce this woman. It'll be less impulsive and something that's done in the heat of the moment, because he'll have to think about it. He takes some time to do this, and he will calm down and then rethink what he wants to do. So now they go to read the get. They open up the get, and sure enough, they find that there are a certain number of folds or stitchings over here, and they exceed the number of edim on it. Now, a get has to have signatures on the back of each fold. So over here, they don't have signatures on the back of each fold. One of the folds is missing a signature. So that's why it's a get kereach. It's a bald get. I mean, it's missing the hair or the signature that should be there. And therefore, it's a get pasul. My time, huh? Why is it a pasul get? As you're noting over here, you have a minimum of two kasher edim on this get, so at least it should be a get. Okay, so they didn't fulfill this takanat chachamim of get kushar, which is there to help out with the kohen. But it still should be a get. Mar says, b'gzeira mishum kulchem. Because we fear that the Baal's instructions were, all of you sign this get. So we know from early on in the Masechta, when he says all of you sign this get, all of them have to sign the get. And if all of them don't sign the get, then it's a pasul get. So we're afraid in this case that the instructions were given, kulchem, all of you signed the get, and then somebody didn't do that. And when they didn't do that, one of the folds is missing now, an aid. And it's not only a failure in terms of not being a get mikushar, which is a takanat derabanan, but now it's a failure in the instructions of the Baal. Failure in the instructions of the Baal, that is a pasul get. And that's our fear over here. And so why we think this is a pasul get. Because over here, there's a necessity for that many edim. The fact that it's absence already a problem in the get. We're not going to be choshesh for kulchem in scenarios where the person doesn't say kulchem and there are two edim signed on it. In a case where there's a need for multiple edim, and one of them is missing, already there's circumstantial evidence that something went wrong over here, and somebody didn't sign on this get. So that could be just a technical problem, which is they didn't do it at get mikushar. Or it could be a much more serious problem, which is he was instructed to sign on here, and he didn't sign on there, and that makes it a pasul get. In this case, we're going to be choshesh that it's possibly a get pasul. Now, Tosfot over here says that, remember that we said the reason that get keriach is pasul when it's missing a signatory is because we worry about kuchem. So he says, v'teima, v'achar de paslin and get keriach mishum kuchem, v'ototam nifsal karov l'achtim betocho. For the same reason that you're worried about kuchem, why don't you worry about a karov signing in the document? Because if the Baal said kuchem, then we would require all of them to be ksherim and all of them to be signed there. Well, if that's the case, then they'd all have to be ksherim. And so then why don't we say that a karov should be eliminated from that perspective? It says, v'yesh lachalek, t'hachav imikushar, deidav, gimel, hikshiru bo echad karov. That over here, by the mikushar, where the edim already three, then they allowed for one karov. Meaning that the kuchem over here is different than the kuchem in a regular get. In a regular get, if he says kuchem, they all have to be kosher edim, and they all have to sign on it. The kuchem by a get mikushar can even include a karov. Since a karov is kosher, when he says kuchem, then it could mean you two kosher edim and this karov, you sign on it. But that would make it pasul. If they don't all sign on it, it would make it pasul, even though one of those people that are signing it is a karov, is not kosher, they do. So what he's saying is that the definition is what I mentioned, that the definition of kulchem here is different than the definition of kulchem in other cases. And that's because we already have multiple edim over here, and that kulchem here can even include pasul edim, because that's what's allowed over here. Kulchem in other scenarios is everybody, but everybody that is a kosher aid. And that's why you would redefine the word kulchem in the case of get mikushar versus the case of a regular get. Get kereach ha'kol mashlimim alav. Rabbi Akiva, Eved, my time alone. Rabbi Akiva, why does he say that the only pasul eidut that is allowed to sign on the get is a karov and not an Eved? Why can't a slave sign on it? Datu lemeimar kasher leidut. Because they're going to say that he is kasher leidut. Karov nami, atu lemeimar kasher leidut. If signing on the document is going to give evidence that this person is kasher leidut, then you should have as much suspicion when an Eved signs it that people might think he's a kasher eid. As when a karov signs it, people say, oh, karovim aren't problematic in witnesses. So that's not a good reason, because that's a reason to also preclude a karov. So by a eved, you might have him be assumed to be a free man now. Because the fact that he's signing on a get, people will assume, well, if he's an aid and he's signing on the get, he must be a free man. So therefore he's not allowed to sign on the get. But then gazlan, dubai yuchsin ulit kasher. A gazlan who is pasul the eidut because al tashed yadcha im rasha liot eid chamas, you're not allowed to sign on a document somebody who's a thief, someone who's already been implicated in violating an iser lav of gzela, then why is that a problem? If you're worried just about yuchsin, a gazlan can have good yuchsin and that won't be a problem. Yet, Rabbi Kiva does not allow a gazlan to sign on the get, so that can't be the reason. Karovin, gazlan lo. He says only a karov is allowed, not a gazlan. The problem by the Eved is, we're afraid that people will assume that he freed the Eved. So not that we're going to bring him up to Yuchsin, not that we're going to say that an Eved is kosher leidut, but simply, people are going to assume that he was freed. Because in the other cases, they know he's an Eved. So they know he's Eved, they know that he's not kosher leidut, they know that he's not miyuchas. But in a case where you're suspecting him being freed, that's information that could change over time. That means that even if they knew he was an Eved yesterday, doesn't mean he's an Eved today. Could have been that the master freed him. And that's our suspicion over here. When he signs on the get, people might see it as an indication of being freed. Gazlan nami, atu lemeimer tshuva abad. So what are they going to say about a gazlan? Again, the circumstances changed. He was a gazlan yesterday, but he did tshuva, and now he's not a gazlan anymore. So now they'll assume that he's kosher le'edut. Karov, ma'ika lemeimer. By a karov, what are you going to say? Karov, kuliyama yadei de karov. What are you going to say, that he is a karov? Everybody knows that relatives are pasul le'edut. And so what bad could come of it? Oh yeah, he's a relative that signed on it. So he's still a relative after he signed on it. Nothing changed. The relative is still a relative. And therefore he's not going to be deemed kashur le'edut, or nothing bad will come from this. And that's where we keep his reasoning. Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rabba Bar Shi'ilta, Amar Rabba Hamnuna Saba, Amar Rabba Adarba'ava, Get Kireach, Kisharav Shiv'a. If its stitchings or its folds are 7, Ve'dav Shisha, but only has 6 signatures on it. Shisha, Vedav Chamisha, 6 folds or stitchings, and only 5 Edim. Chamisha, Vedav Arba'a, 5 with only 4 Edim. Arba'a, Vedav Shlosha, 4 with only 3. Adkan Machloket Ben Nanas Rabbi Kiva. Until that point, you have Machloket Ben Nanas Rabbi Kiva as to who is kasher to sign on such a get. Kiva says only Krovim, whereas Ben Nanas says anybody, any pasul de'edu can sign of it. Aval, Ksharav Shlosha, if there are only 3 folds on here, Ve'edav shnayim, and then there are only 2 edim here. Divrei Hakol ein mashlimin alav elel karov. Then when you have to go fill it out and fill in the last piece there, you can only add on a karov. So over here, in order to make the get kashur kasher, you have to add on another signature here. So you have to have them sign an additional fold here. Who can be brought in to sign that additional fold? So in the case where it's multiple folds and multiple edim and there's one missing, you can bring anybody in to fill it in according to Ben Nanas. According to Rabbi Kiva, you can only bring in a karov, and that's their machloket. But in a case where there are 3 folds, and now you're going to add in one more signature, that signature, even according to Ben Nanas, could be a karov, but nothing else. There's no other psul that's allowed. So I'm going to lay Rabbi Zera, the Rabba Bar Shilta, Michtei, Koshlosha b'mikushar, Kishnayim b'pashutami. We see that when it comes to 3 signatures by a mikushar, they're the equivalent of 2 by a regular get. Mahatam karovlo, avacha nami karovlo. Just like there by 2 edim, which are the minimum for a get to be kasher, it can only be kasher edim, and krovim are psulim. So if 3 is the minimum by a get mikushar, and a get mikushar at minimum has 3 folds in it, and therefore you would need 3 edim, that minimum should require 3 kasher edim. So then why are you even suggesting when it's 3 and there are 2 that you can be mashlim with a karov? Forget about Ben Nanas agreeing to Rabbi Kiva. Even Rabbi Kiva would say that you can't use a karov here. You have to use a kasher aid. So in order to be a become kasher, the minimum is 3. So the minimum you have to do right. After that, you can add on edim that are not kasherim. So Amalei, after the dikashali, said I had that same question about this psak halacha, and I asked Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna, the Rav Adar Bava, and then Rav Hamnuna asked Rav Adar Bava. That's why we see here the Mesorah came through all these individuals. Amalei, hanach l'shloshah v'mikushar tala doraita. Why are you so worried about 3 in a mikushar? That is only a din drabonon. So meaning, yes, that the minimum number of signatories on a get mikushar is 3, but a get mikushar to start with is only a din drabonon. So they're mekil, meaning that midoraita, when you do it with the regular get, the minimum is 2. When those are midoraita, they have to be kasher edim. But here already, when you expand to 3 edim by a get mikushar, we don't equate them to the edim on a regular get, which are edim doraita. Here, get mikushar is only derabanan, and the 3rd aid is only a din derabonan. So there, they were mekel to allow a karov to be the signatory. So Tanya Nami Yochev, we have a bright, that corroborates that understanding. Get kariach. Kisharav shiva beidav shisha. You have 7 folds or 7 stitchings or ties. Beidav shisha, but only 6 signatories. 6 veidav chamisha, 6 knots, and only 5 edim chamisha, 5 knots veidav arba, and then only 4 signatories arba, 4 veidav shlosha. Ad kan machloket ben Nanas veRabbi Akiva. Until that point, is the machlokas between ben Nanas and Rabbi Akiva. Hishlim alav evet. If he used an evet to fill in that last empty one, ben Nanas omer avlad kasher. Ben Nanas says that the vlad's kasher. That's a kasher get according to him. Kiva Omer, a Vlad Mamzer. The Kiva says that the Vlad's a Mamzer because that's not a good get. It's a Pasul get now. Aval, Kisharav Shlosha, Veidav Shnaim. It has three knots, or three ties and stitches to it. Beitav Shnaim only has two edim on it. Divya Akoli Meshlim Ela Bekarov. That the only way that you can fill in that last one is according to Shita Rabbi Kiva with the Karov, and according to Ben Nadas, he will agree with Rabbi Kiva in that case, that it has to be a Karov, because we raise the standard in that case for that third signatory, which is part of the Ikar Din of Get Mikushai, which is the minimum amount of edim you need. So we don't go up to a level d'oraita, you need a totally kosher eid, but we still require that it only be a psul of Karov, which is more of a Gzeret HaKatuv than anything else, not an inherent psul in the eid, versus the signatures after number three, where Benana says you can use anybody, even an Eved, where but Rabbi Kiva still holds that standard, it has to be a Karov. Rav Yosef Matne Kasher. Yosef says that it is Kasher. If you look in Rashi, Rashi says, B'milta d'Rabbi Zeir Amar Rav Shilta, that if you have three ksharim, three knots or three folds here, and you only have two edim, Rav Yosef insists that the third aid be a kasher. This is exactly what you asked. Not only the first two edim, but the third aid must be kasher. That's Rav Yosef's opinion. So Rav Yosef disagrees with what we just saw from Rabbi Zeira, that the third aid could be a karov. Even though Benana says it can't be anybody, but they at least agree that it could be a karov. Rav Yosef says, no, the third aid has to be kasher. Why? Because three is like two. Just like two is the minimum by a regular get, and you need them to be kasher. The minimum three by a get mikusher have to be ksherim, midoraita. And that was what you were suggesting. That's Rabbi Yosef's opinion. Vatanya, karov. Doesn't our bright to say you can put in a karov? Amar Papa today kasher. Imen the bright to read not karov, but kasher. And that the requirement is not a karov, but a kasher. Someone who's totally kasher leidut. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Lo hukshu bo. Ela eid echad karov bilvad. You're only allowed to put in one aid that is a karov. Aval trei lo. But if you have more than one aid that is a karov, signing a get mushar, it's problematic. Dilma the ate the kumei betray krovim, because you may end up then verifying or validating the get with two krovim, the chad kasher and one kasher aid, because when they go to validate the get mikushar. We said before that the minimum for a get mikushar is three edim. So what you have to do is find individuals who can verify for us the signatories of this get mikushar. If they verify three signatures on the get, then it's a kosher get based on the signatures. But if you allow more than one karov to sign on the get, they're going to come along and then say, oh, I know this one, I know this one, and this one. There's a possibility then that two out of those three edim are krovim. And the get's not kasher at all because you are validating the get with krovim instead of with edim ksherim. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says the maximum number of krovim that can be signed onto a get, or according to Benanas, the maximum number of psulim that can be on the get are one. You can only have one piece of the get that can be done by a pasul. Amar Rav Ashi Matnita Namideka, the Braita that we brought down, the Tosefta that we brought down, is miduyak that that's the case. Because Vitani Chad Chad skips down, meaning that it goes 7, 6, 5, 4. And every time it says there's a deficit of one signatory. Why doesn't it say it's 7 with 6 signatories and then 7 with 5 signatories? It doesn't do that. Every time it says it's only missing one signatory. Why? Shma Mida, because that when it says in the Braita, you could be Mashlim in our Mishnah, it says Mashlim. Mashlim means only that one missing piece. You could be mashlim with the psul. And that's why, because it's telling you, everybody else has to be kasher edim. Samar Abaye, Shma Mina. From this you can conclude, Hai Karov, Chatim, Ibai Ben Betchila, Ben Be'emtza, Ben Besof. That this Karov, or Pasul aid, that is signing on the Get Mikushar, he can sign anywhere. He can be the first aid, he can be the last aid, he can be the aid somewhere in the middle. Mimai, how does Abaye know this? Midalo Kavalei Makom. Because they didn't establish a place for him. Because the fact that they did not establish for him a particular place, if you would say that the Karov always has to be at the end, or the Karov has to be in the beginning, or the Karov has to be exactly in the middle, then we'd know where the Pasul aid was, and we wouldn't validate the get with that individual. The fact that we are validating the get and we don't know where the Karov is signed indicates to you that there wasn't a specific location where he signed in the get. That's the first conclusion. Ushmamina, the second conclusion is, Mikol Tlata Mikaiminan. You can pick any three of the signatories in order to validate the get. Lo Beinan Ritzufim. It doesn't have to be three signatories in order. Because if it was three signatories in order, let us put him in a specific place, and then put extra ksherim in between. Meaning that you could always create a scenario. First of all, you put in a karov, then a kasher, then a kasher, then a karov, then a kasher, then a kasher. There would never be three in a row that are psulim, because you'd always have two ksherim between every two krovim, or between every two psulim. If you do that, then if you have to have three in order, you'll never have a case where you validate the get with three krovim. Because you have karov, kasher, kasher, karov, kasher, kasher, karov. So by definition, you will never validate the get without two edim ksherim. The fact that we don't say that means that they don't have to be in order. You can pick them randomly. Any three signatories over here can validate the get. If that's the case, then we don't know. Just because you have two ksherim in between the krovim means that he could pick this karov, that karov, and you're going to end up validating the get from krovim instead of ksherim. Those are the two conclusions that Abaye comes from, the halacha, that you can't sign more than one karov onto a get mikushar. Kiatu kamei de Rabbi Ami, they came for Amayavi Amalei, say vishlim alav eved min ashuk. Go and finish off the get with an eved min ashuk, meaning that Rabbi Ami here is passing like bananas, and saying that it was missing one signatory over here. You want to make it into a kasher get, get an eved to sign on it, and it will be kasher. Rashi says something very important over here. Rashi says, the sofer ve'edim ifaneinu, the original edim are still there, and the sofer is still writing it, v'dayin lo nimtzar la, and the get is yet to be given to the woman. So according to Rashi, this validation over here, where he's allowing them to fill in the extra aid, is when the get is still in process. So then, the halacha, he says, is like bananas. And therefore, we say that he can fill it in with an ebed. Tosfot over here says that this is not necessarily the case. That he had two people sign on it. Then after a long time, he had another aid sign on, a third aid. V'chshiru misvara. They said it's kasher misvara. Da'ad arminan ein ede get chutmim zeh below zeh. The fact that you have to have edim sign on a get, and they all have to be present. They can't be signing without the other one that's there. Hainu b'shnayim. That is only in a case where you're talking about the minimum need, the actual edim that are signing on the get, the two edim. Oh, shizimein shlosha yachad. Or he originally invited three to sign on the get. She'ena get yachol yot pachot. As yechtemu kulam zeh b'fnei zeh. Then there's a requirement that they all sign in front of each other. But in a case where the get was already done, and he had put two signatories on it, and it was a kosher get, then later on he finds another guy and says, hey, why don't you sign on it? That guy is Eino Malev, Eino Morid. Doesn't matter. We don't need him to make it into a kosher get. And he wasn't appointed in the beginning to make it into a kosher get. Therefore, if he signs without the other two edim, totally fine. Rabbeinu Tam, Hevi Raya. Rabbeinu Tam brings a proof to this sheet of the Rabbeinu Meshulam. Mikan, from our case here. The kasher, here it's kasher. The lishna that say vashleim alav, evi min ashuk, mashma, shekvar chatmu arishonim. Not like Rashi. He's saying here that the original edim already signed on the get mikushar. And now after the fact, they're going to find this evid to be mashlim the get. Lo yatzariach kim lashlim, alma, kevin shekvar hukshar get adei rishonim, since we already have a kosher get from the first edim, tulo mitzlo bashlamat achirim zeh shlo bifnei zeh. The additional edim that sign on it, don't have to follow the protocol that they have to be in front of the other edim, because it gets already kasher. They're all unnecessary or extraneous. And because of that, when you go and get them to sign on it, like in our case over here, nobody has to be around. You can go take this out to the eved whenever you want and get them to sign on it to make it a kasher. Umiyu, bekuntrus, as we saw in Rashi, Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says that, hasofer va'edim bifaneinu. Rashi says that the sofer and the edim are still here when he goes to get this third signatory, meaning that they're all signing in front of each other. Rashi still has this requirement. Even when you add on an extraneous aid, you have to all be together and sign it together. Whereas Tosafot, the Rabbeinu Tam, says that's not the case. Seve Shlim is a case where, after the fact, they want to add on an extra aid. And Rabbeinu Tam from that proves that Rabbeinu Meshulam is right, that when you add on an aid after the fact, he doesn't have to do it in front of the other edim. That requirement is waived because he's not necessary. You have a kosher get without him. And so, they're saying the same thing here about the get mikushar. There's a kosher get without this eved. So now that you want to sign the Eved on it, you don't need him to do it in front of the other Edim. You don't need everybody to be together. Just get him in the end and put it together. V'chein perish Rabbeinu Elchanan. The Tosafot brings that Rabbeinu Elchanan seems to agree with Rashi that the Gemara over here is speaking about a case where the Edim are still there, and we do require that extra aid sign in front of all the Edim. And if you're deemed to be an aid on a get, even if you're not necessary, you have to follow the protocols of Edim on a get, and you have to sign in front of the other Edim. So you have a Machloket Rashi and Tosafot, which has ramifications of when you add on extraneous Edim, whether they have to be signing in front of the other Edim, or whether they can just sign afterwards because they're not required to make the get into a kosher get. Okay, with that, we end the Perek HaDonalach HaZarek.